I've called my paper Bodies, Boundaries, Living It Out in the World. This is an account of two women artists' subjective and political transformation occasioned by historic upheavals in Indian politics. The setting for both Rumana Hussain, 1952-1999, and Navjot Altaf, born 1949, is Bombay. The account begins with December 1992 with the demolition of the historic Babri Mosque in North India, followed by sectarian conflagration in Bombay, where a large Muslim population is killed or driven out of prime urban space by right-wing Hindu mobs and the real estate mafia of a globalizing metropolis. The larger political space of the artists I speak about is constituted by civil injustices, ethnic and religious struggles, and the condition of the Indian poor in the maneuvers and compromises of the neoliberal ruling class of India in relation to global capital. It is constituted at its best by the complex course of a democracy that has a dynamic different from the West. To this compound narrative, I attribute the artists, these artists and other artists in India, about whom I will not have the opportunity to talk, their politicization as also an important aspect of their gendered subject positions, considering that the fuzzy boundaries of subjectivity is focused the moment it takes effect as art practice in the public domain. The trope of mortality. If unexpected vacillations in Indian politics changed Rumana Hussain into a feminist and a minority artist both at once, the procedure also can be seen in reverse. This marginality coincides with the woman paradigm, the model for rupture premised on otherness, which, riddled with epistemic doubt, may yet claim to reconcile aesthetics and politics. At the instance when Rumana's social designation, privileged, progressive, Muslim, woman, artist, came under pressure, she began to recast her identity. In the face of hostile gestures from across the Hindu divide, she drew on the discourse of the female body, the first object sign to come under scrutiny when historical events overtake routine norms of social existence. In her 1996 exhibition, Home Nation, she conflated these two terms to indicate the growing contradiction buried in the promise of belonging. Rumana set herself the project to try and deconstruct the logic of sectarian discourse, to inhabit its fiction, and to radicalize practice in a way that she may refuse the cumulative force of a ruling ideology. Until her death in 1999, Rumana held on to a paradoxical claim. Constitutionally, as an Indian citizen, she would not consent to be the other. But at this moment in history, she would test the limits of political belonging by embodying the destabilized subject. Rumana Hussain arrived at a feminist place in art through critical ethnography and secularism, a cultural compound peculiar to her place and time, India in the 1990s. If a redefinition of identity became something of a painful devolution of the cosmopolitan Rumana, she compounded the difficulty by producing signs from her family's feudal origins in the mystically infused cultural history of 19th century India in Lucknow in North India, but in the form of a detritus, photocopied manuals of a Muslim woman's custom, comportment, desire, objection, an account of domestic workers' terminal disease, contact prints of female hands rolling dough, indigo-dyed cloths, cotton sewing hoops hung like shrouds, like curtains, to a courtesan's chamber. So that she might disperse her aristocratic antecedents on offer were bits of a fictional subject, the Muslim woman, her life configured by predictable tokens of repressed eroticism. Sets of photographs accompanied the installation: Islamic archways, open mouths, halved papayas, the hollows suggesting metaphors of a complete life, like full bellies, great domes, lit halos, cupped hands that seek to recover faith, a wholeness imagined through loss. As an installation, Home Nation worked through a set of displacements where nothing added up, not certainly a citizen subject in the proper sense. The tomb of Begum Hazrat Mahal, 1997, reversed the condition of loss by resurrecting a quasi-historical figure of a Muslim queen, a possible insurgent from the time of India's first great anti-colonial mutiny in 1857. Discovering a fictional ancestor, claiming her place in history through photographic simulations, Romana placed the feminine in the field of the fetish. Fertility, prayer, ornament, and a defiant gesture, hoping that this would help her cross the threshold of the unrepresented feminine and allow entry into social relations which produce them. She worked on her last funerary installation, Space for Healing, in 1999, till just before she died, and succeeded in relaying through bricolage and a mise-en-scène a consciously orientalist cultural theatrics of pain. Six stretchers meant to transport the dead lay on the ground. They could be cloth-covered Sufi graves decorated here with tasseled coils of medical tubes. The room-size installation, tomb, shrine, and hospital room had walls inscribed with domestic implements shaped like the Urdu script, a wordless prayer in iron lettering. Within a space washed in a rose light that dimmed and glowed, street noises described day and night in the great city. An apotheosis was staged where the urban nightmare, a nightmare in exact inverse of the dreamer's Bombay, was put to rest. Space for Healing condensed in the form of her own death, the need for social mourning. In a 1998 performance titled, Is It What You Think?, Romana sat in a chair dressed in black lace undergarments and a cascading long false plait. The slides projected on the body testified that she was Muslim. She recited a text, reading a book wrapped like the Holy Quran. The performance was an ironical rendering of a questionnaire to the Muslim woman, who is the object of religious injunctions and urban ethnography. Who asks the question? The mullah or the ethnographer? Who answers them? The devout woman or the despoiled feminist? Romana pretended through a recited text to parry religious taboos, hegemonic Islam, forced privacy, undesired intrusion. And I read a very tiny fragment from the performance text. Unfortunately, the video of the performance is no longer available. It was destroyed. And I have only a text of which I read a few lines. Is it what you think? Romana was sitting and performing this in the time I saw her in Amsterdam. How do you interpret that? Do you think that she believes in the jihad? Did you read it in today's newspaper? Have you defined her, slotted her? Where can she go? Does she resort to her faith? What are her options? Does she chant her prayers? Have you identified her? Has she a lover? Do his fingers touch her body? Does she force them up? Is she ecstatic? Do you believe her? Does she believe you? Does she have soft breasts? Or has she had a mastectomy? Has she been mutilated? Can she bear the pain? Are your words like scissors? Does she carry a knife? Does she chop vegetables? Does she laugh? Does she feel threatened? Is she afraid of ethnic cleansing? Does she threaten you? Does her privacy offend you? Are you confused between resistance and war? Do you think that she has radical views? Is that your construct? And it goes on for a very much longer time. Rumana decided at considerable cost to herself that if religious identity begins to matter, it must matter in a conscious and dialectical way. She relearned history through elective affinities and joined the lament of her covered sisters, who may indeed exceed their freer counterparts in living out the contradictions of present-day liberal society. Revolving inside this allegorical account was another set of affinities with women who have undergone mastectomy and suffer trauma. Using performative means, she made simultaneous use of all the signs. An embodied icon, she was a woman classically faced with the law and mocking it by an indexical, a symptomatic means, a wound and a prosthetic inside her bodice. Taking the cue from Mary Kelly's complex formulations, many artists like Rumana Hussain have been able to work on the assumption, and this is a quote, "Discourse inhabits the recesses of subjectivity no less pervasively than the outer world, and therefore to develop thereby an inner speech." In this instance, interpolating the body into a coercive sociality, Rumana offered a classic generic style of interrogation. Is it what you think? The trope of mortality placed her somewhat askance in relation to ethnographic masquerade popular with non-Western women, especially in the diaspora. Indeed, Rumana's identity as an Indian Muslim bristled when she over-identified with her chosen role. And she worked out a performative economy such as to indicate that she was giving up rather than gaining an identity. For while Rumana allegorized the female body in situations of crisis, she worked confidently with an activist, artists, and intellectuals collective that functions in the public domain from Delhi and throughout India to address the precise crisis of right-wing nationalism. She put her name to everything secular through her activism. She put her name to everything secular, and through her activism, she could announce what her performance masked, that her nationality was at stake, and that if her work was about being a Muslim woman artist in a climate of desecularized India, this was a reiteration of the secular in a paradoxical way, so as to prepare forms of bodily recovery, a recovery also of the body politic. The second part I call modes of parallel practice, Navjot Altaf. As an art student and artist in Bombay, Navjot Altaf participated in the left student movement of the 1970s. In a major industrial city like Bombay, the proletariat remains according to fixed norms of progress, both content and addressee of representational practices premised on realism. At the same time, within India's predominantly agricultural society, peasant subjects are placed in the field of radical representationalism with even greater ardor. However, while the subaltern figure is well contextualized in Indian left-wing movements and corresponding social science discourse, the occupied space continues to resonate with Gayatri Spivak's rhetorical question, can the subaltern speak? Any post-colonial artist relating to peasant and working class or Adivasi, which is a term, which is an Indian term for indigenous tribal peoples, and Dalits, the low caste or untouchable caste members, any post-colonial artist relating to peasant and working class or Adivasi and Dalit cultures encounters a valorized embodiment of the subaltern, but a disabling distance, the actual chasm still structurally in place within the democratic polity of India. In the 1980s, the women's movement in India, led by activists and backed by a small, strong flank of theorizing feminists working on specific historical struggles in India, provided a context for Navjot to conduct to conduct controlled acts of displacement and engagement with respect to the category of the other. Prodded by her eclectic reading of feminism, she drew upon her own productively insecure identity as woman and artist to refigure anthropological pursuits famously conducted by securely entitled men in relation to communities classified by sociology and, more crucially, by governmentality. In 1997, Navjot dislodged herself from Bombay and started living for some part of the year in Kondagaon, a small town in the large rural Adivasi region of Bastar in central India. As an artist seeking to conceptualize alternative renderings of the female body, Navjot expressed a preference for a primitivist archetype, knowing well that it is also a stereotype in male modernist aesthetic. Her representational strategies for the female body and its locational transfer to gain coding possibilities different to middle-class protocols of gendered self-representation has a long artistic lineage in the world, for that matter, and certainly in India. But the conceptual basis for the transformation, for the transfiguration in Navjot's Bastar-based work came from situating herself midway in an activist and an aesthetic project, whereby she hoped to develop a double take, a material grounding of her subjectivity within a social project, as well as its reflexive rendering as discourse of and in art. If we see this in the light of Navjot's continued engagement with public art projects, her collaborative practices with artists from rural and cosmopolitan backgrounds, her intent begins to mature. It is to destabilize canons of the Indian modern artist, as also of younger neoliberal artists in a state of self-reification on the global stage. But how shall we designate the collaboration between Navjot Altaf and Shanti Bai or Ganga Devi in the village? Considering their conventional status as nothing more than helpers within artisanal households, skillful and innovative as they might be, and now via projects like those of Navjot, moving on to autonomous art-making activity for the first time, what does she hope to achieve together with her colleagues in Kondagaon? While she has taken care not to overcompensate deprived subjects with identificatory sentiments, not to assume, like activists, that an artist's representational choice translates into representational politics and directly activate people's struggles. She has surmounted, nevertheless, her studio practice with large-scale social projects in Bastar. One involves women in building functional, site-specific structures called Nalpar, which literally translates into at the hand pump, the municipal hand pump, which has replaced the village well, but which has conditions of labor difficult for women and for, in fact, little girls who perform the task on the behalf of the domestic setup. And the other is called Pillagudi, meaning literally temples for children. And one concerns women in the village ecology, the other creative pedagogy for children. Counting on the phenomenological effect of artistic affiliations, Navjot has reopened definitional questions of anthropological identity based on a culturally sanctioned language with entrenched social divisions constitutive of patriarchal and capitalist social relations, and identification as an active form of projection, mimesis, and masquerade, conjuring the ambiguous figure of art. And as it happens, Ganga Devi, one of her collaborator or colleagues from Kondagaon, has produced an astonishing set of paintings, pictures, which are bluntly autobiographical. We can then take both identity and identification as being committed to the everyday, version of representational politics, as well as a manageable scale of collective action within the constructed community. To James Clifford's anthropological understanding, identity is conjunctural, not essential. We can add feminism's recognition of the exclusionary nature of all definitional systems, all categorized identities, the interdependency of ideological stances, and a contingent understanding of subject positions. Speaking about Mary Kelly, Norman Bryson once said that the self implied is one that exists across identifications and traverses a whole array of identities and discourses which construct and sustain subjectivity, not one that absorbs these back into its own coherent and organic unity. Navjot Altaf's own work, a large part of which involves installation video, is about a reconstruction of identity through a necessary attenuation of identity, leading her paradoxically to the necessity of disidentification. Whatever thematic she chooses, contradictions are so choreographed and enacted that markedly different protagonists, including juvenile lumpens in her video titled Mumbai Meri Jaan, rural labor, ancient artisans, female field hands, can be variously mythologized and, in Navjot's imaginary, so positioned as to yield a polyvocal vocabulary of emancipation, even plenitude, that has a praxeological effect, if not some practical outcome. Since the mid-1990s, a small number of Indian artists, along with a growing number of documentarists interfacing with experimental authors, have referred quite significantly to the terms of citizenship in a crisis-bound civil society, declaring their partisanship towards communities named and shattered through majoritarian violence, the Muslims, towards a populace subjected to bad or cruel governance, the Dalits and the Adivasis. These artists find ways to address the state seen to betray its own meta-narrative of equality. And you would perhaps remember, or not, this is not part of your framework, India did declare itself to be not only a sovereign state at the time of independence, but with a very definite socialist inclination, and was part of the pioneering non-aligned movement, which became the generator of the third world polity and ideology. The artworks tend to be mixed media object photo video installations, such that an alternative, is it possibly an avant-garde space, is opened out. This is, so to speak, an investigation of the national via a semiotics, via a carefully worked system of heterodox and heterogeneous signs that allows social imaginaries to be assembled and perched above the symbolic that is always too heavily invested with authority. During phases of right-wing ascendancy and social crises, Navjot, like her circle of peers, has undertaken mediatic shifts that spell the hidden decree of power and the means of recovery. While Navjot refers to specific instances of political violence, she works with the aftermath. She works with the aftermath when she can put to test an aesthetic that alters its signs along the sliding scale of referential meanings, leading us to a historical residue of social suffering. I refer here to a large installation work titled Between Memory and History from 2001, its monumental structure and its multiple metonymies. Lacuna and Testimony from 2003, a multi-projection video made by Navjot after the 2002 state-backed genocide against Muslims in the province of Gujarat, in the western province of Gujarat in India, draws on the testimonies of women whose bodies or bodies of their kin were violated and are since designated as victims, refugees, witnesses. Navjot developed a voice archive that she then refused to represent. She recorded and then erased the privilege of speech allowed to the stigmatized citizen. She tried instead that her faintly registered images contain the pain of overexposed identities, their bewilderment before juridical lapse and political ruse. Not foregrounding the iconic, nor also the photo indexical, but nor even speech, not even the speech of recorded testimony, which as an invocation is after all embodied, her non-performative mode signals the loss of body in a quasi-temporal blur, an aesthetic of erasure. In Lacuna, what appears is subliminal images on the ebb and tide of the ocean, the Arabian Sea, striking the extended coastline of Bombay. Three adjacent screens installed with a set of mirrors on the floor play a resounding ocean, on the surface of which digitally generated window cubes appear in silent succession. As the frosty panes clear, you glimpse documentary images of destruction in low resolution. The illusory boundary, the horizon, pushes up an oceanic archive of submerged and frozen footage. The cubes complete a grid across three screens, vanishing the same way in fluid succession. At the point of completion, the roaring waves turn crimson. A displaced plaint, the voice of a child in a refugee camp in the city of Ahmedabad, Gujarat, is traced over it. The camp, a paradigmatic structure of the modern state and a defining format for the perverse sustainment of bare life. The boy's illegible wail fills the lacuna of his and our memory and brings him perhaps to a healing station. Do Navjot's paired means of representation belie the radical end towards which they signal? Do they dehistoricize tragedy? Or does the moving image, situated as it is in a physical, sometimes monumental space, release clues that track the bleak and nearly incomprehensible reality of exclusion? Condensing the undulating time of recall and forgetting, of anxiety and indifference, of memorializing and denial, she finds something of a shadow language, alluding to the loss inscribed within testimony and a hypothetical reemergence of possibilities that are beyond memory inside history. We'll play a small clip. Can we have the DVD, please? Which is a small fragment towards the end of the video which I've just spoken about, Lacuna in Testimony, from Navjot Altaf. Are the lights down? Are they? Thank you. And I... I hope I don't need to emphasize or reiterate the fact that as much as this is an example of two artists in their formation in relation to a historical moment or a historic period in the life of the nation, it is also about citizenship, gender, and language in one configuration. And which, to my mind, is also the paradigm within which I would like to see the question of body, sexuality, identity.